Fran Belfast. Morning, Fran.
Morning, Stephen. How are you, mate?
Go ahead.
Stephen, just a few comments there. I basically want to say, I think it shows you the utter contempt and disregard of both the Assembly and the electorate that's been shown by Sinn Féin and the DUP. They've chosen David Gordon for that position, and they've changed the law to suit. I think they really need Stephen to come in, mate, because they're going to have to spin all the NAMA, the double jobbing, Red Sky, expensive scandals, spads and political appointments. I mean, there seems to be every other day on your show or every other week there's a new scandal. So I question whether or not we should continue with Stormont, or because I don't think it would have any of these scandals under direct rule.
On the point of that they have chosen David Gordon specifically, yes, for the job, and I was not boarded. You know, just for clarity, the BBC does similar thing with presenters. There's no boarding process for me. The BBC decided they wanted me because of whatever the skills they interpreted that I had, and they approached me and they offered the job, and no one else could get the job. So every presenter within the BBC that will be covering this story today, they haven't boarded for their own job. They were handpicked, just as Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster have identified a very able man and decided they want him to represent them.
To be fair, Stephen, you mentioned this yourself earlier on. You mentioned the fact that people alluded to the fact that that there's only one specific person for the one specific job that has the specific skills required for that. I find that very, very, very hard to believe. Anybody from a consultant pediatrician in a hospital to a top judge or someone in the civil service, normally people should apply for the post. It should be open and above board, honest and transparent, I think.
Well, this was honest because it was within the rules, and the opposition parties currently criticising it. Ask how many of those opposition parties have not gone out and handpicked their own special advisers.
Yes,
that's what they will have done.
Yes, and I totally accept that as well. What I'm accepting is the fact that you shouldn't have special advisers. I don't think there's a place in civil society where we can just have political appointments, which in some respects could be regarded as political nepotism, picking the people you want for those jobs.
Which political persuasion would you be from? Would you be more Sinn Féin or more DUP?
No, I was a Sinn Féin supporter till I realised there's no socialism in Sinn Féin. I'm a socialist, so I wouldn't vote for either of those parties.
All right. Fra, thank you. James in Sinn Féin. Morning, James.
Good morning.
Go ahead, James.
My contention is that it doesn't matter what the job is, it should be advertised. After all, that's why the equality legislation was brought in. But it seems to me that government are the ones who are riding roughshod through it all.
Well, they're not, because the law, they changed the law. Mm-hmm. So that they were allowed to make this appointment.
Yeah, exactly. But you referred to your appointment to the BBC. Where does it say in the equality legislation that the BBC are exempt from advertising posts? There was a guy appointed to the BBC as the Director General or something after Chris Patton, I think it was, took ill. And he hadn't even applied for the job, and yet the BBC appointed him.
Well, now, I don't know the arrangements around the Director General job. I would guess that actually it is advertised. I would guess it would be advertised.
But he didn't apply for it. But yet, whenever the other party took ill or didn't take the job, they appointed him.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, why should you be doing that?
James, thank you. Morning to you. Sam McBride from the newsletter, political journalist, has been all over this story. Morning to you, Sam.
Morning, Stephen.
Well, you probably heard the DUP in the guise of Alistair Ross this morning explaining how it's just the normal course of events for ministers to use ministerial powers to make a ministerial appointment.
Generally, ministers use ministerial powers which are set out under primary legislation. So a bill has gone through the Assembly, it's been scrutinised, it has given the minister a particular authority. And the first thing to say here, and something which Alistair Ross, I think, was absolutely right to say, is that nobody is questioning David Gordon's ability. I worked with David Gordon quite a number of years ago at the Belfast Telegraph. He's an outstanding journalist. I can't see how, if they had advertised this, he would have had any difficulty whatsoever getting through that process. So just to be absolutely clear about that, the issue here and the core issue, which goes way beyond this appointment, is that the law was changed, and it was changed in a way which was entirely secretive. And that has huge implications for Northern Ireland. I mean, we've got a situation where this law, which was changed, is called the Civil Service Commissioner's Order. And that law, that order sets up the Civil Service Commissioners, a body which scrutinises public appointments in the civil service. And that body was unaware that the law which they are supposed to enforce had been changed. So, I mean, how on earth are they supposed to implement a law which has been changed and which as far as I know, to the latter part of last week, they still hadn't been informed of me.
Well, the executive office would say it wasn't secretive because when you asked for the information, you were given it.
Well, that's a rather retrospective way of looking at this. I mean, just because we ask for something a week after the law has been changed doesn't mean that the law has not been changed in secret. Clearly, there is nobody, it would seem, outside of the executive office. Certainly, they have been unable to point to anybody outside of Stormont Castle who knew that this was happening. I mean, it's a pretty basic principle of natural justice that for everybody to be subject to the law, we have to know what the law is. In this case, it seems that the law was changed, okay, in a way which does not massively bearing on my life and your life, on individual people. But the principle is quite extraordinary, I think.
The principle of what?
The principle that ministers are using prerogative powers, which are really, as Joshua Rosenberg said, therefore quite extreme situations to do what is really quite a routine appointment. They had a vacancy for a press secretary. They decided they wanted to slightly tweak the job so that it would be more political. Rather than bring that to the Assembly or even use prerogative powers to change that and announce it at the time, and there may have been some public discussion about that, this was done in private, and really it's been dragged out of them after the event.
Let's look at what David Gordon's role will actually be as the joint spin doctor for two of the biggest political opponents that there has ever been. When Alistair Ross was drawing a parallel with London, well, if you take David Cameron as a more recent example, he had a former BBC man, Craig Oliver, very much pushing his message. And what's wrong with that, for goodness sake, pushing a message? But how is it going to work? It's different in Northern Ireland, Sam. How is it going to work, one man pushing a message on two political opponents, for two political opponents? What happens when you from the newsletter contact David and want to talk about Arling? Is he obliged to tell his new boss, Martin, the discussion you're having about Arling Foster?
Well, it's very new territory, but I think that for this role to work, David Gordon will only really be able to address those issues in which the DUP and Sinn Féin have a joint position. So you raised the issue of Brexit, of gay marriage, etc., etc. On those issues, I think it's just clear that the executive does not have an agreed position. So
what do we do? As journalists, do we only ask their new spin doctor about issues they agree on? How does he handle press inquiries on issues they don't agree on?
The only way that I can see that he can handle that is to basically bat it back to the parties and say the party has a press office. That's not something on which the executive has a position.
So the new job is for them only to talk about things they agree on?
I can't see how else it would operate, because it is a joint appointment, and he is serving at the joint pleasure of the First and Deputy First Ministers. I just don't see how he can step outside of that without jeopardising his own position.
And if there is a new person appointed to be head of the Executive Information Service, a civil servant, does David Gordon have power over them?
Well, that's one of several questions which haven't been answered. I mean, the executive has repeatedly said over the last few days that he will not be a civil servant. And it would appear to me that he will probably be a temporary civil servant, because the Civil Service Commissioner's order under which he's been appointed deals with the appointment of civil servants. So I think he has to be some sort of civil servant. They have said that he will be bound by some of the terms of a civil servant, but they haven't made clear which of those terms he will not be bound by. So it's not clear, as you say, whether he'll be able to give direction to civil servants, whether he'll be able to tell civil servants to act in a more political way. But I think that the statement which was issued yesterday by the executive office, which was fairly extraordinary and drew quite a bit of surprise from journalists who are used to seeing a lot of these things, gives us perhaps a foretaste of what is to come. It was an extremely political statement issued through the civil service, attacking the opposition, and it has to be said, responding to attacks, but rather than choose to respond to those attacks through the DUP and Sinn Féin's own mechanisms, they used the civil service to do that.
Okay. Sam McBride, thank you very much. We asked Sinn Féin to come on the programme this morning. They didn't want to do so. I don't know if they're happy or not that their new partners in the executive office, the DUP, were talking about the issue, whether they're happy with that or not. Sinn Féin certainly don't want to talk about this issue on this programme this morning. The leader of the TUV very much does, Jim Allister. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, you're in trouble now, Mr. Allister, because the DUP and Sinn Féin are going to get on with running government and improving our lives.
Well, on past performance, that doesn't concern me at all. But the issues, first of all, are not whether David Gordon is the right man for the job. Of course, he's patently an excellent journalist. The issue isn't even whether they need yet another spin doctor to add to the 160 they have. The real issue here, and the constitutional issue, is how and why the First Ministers thought it correct for them to arrogantly and in secret change the law. We have a process in Northern Ireland whereby the laws of the land are made. They're made in the Assembly. That's why we call it a legislative assembly. There are ways and means and processes by which that is done. But the First Ministers abused royal prerogative powers to themselves.
You describe it as abused. Others might describe it as used. Used the royal powers that they actually have. No, used. They used them that they have in the same way that you use the legal powers and the freedom that you have to do what you want to do within your party.
No, I think you heard George Rosenberg explain that royal prerogative is that residual portion of powers which are not exercised in legislation and which ministers then, in certain circumstances, can exercise. But appointments under the Civil Service Commissioner's Order are prescribed in law. They're prescribed in the 1999 order. But the First Ministers took it upon themselves, in secret, to change the law. Now, they have the numbers in Stormont to change the law. They even have the facility of accelerated passage. But rather than bring that change to the floor of the House and say, this is what we want to do and this is why we want to do it, they took it upon themselves to use prerogative powers to secretly change the law.
Yeah, but
that is a flagrant constitutional outrage, and it is something which should not happen in any democratic country. And it is from that then that they make this appointment. But it's not the making of the appointment that matters; it's the making of the change of the law that matters, in the manner in which they made it, using powers which usurped the powers of the Assembly. That's the issue.
So actually, what you're saying this morning, just for clarity, and I understand your objection to them changing the law, but maybe that's what you do when you're in government and you've taken the responsibility of government, as opposed to you sitting on the sidelines. But
no, what you do when you're in government is you abide by the constitutional parameters, which are that we have a legislative assembly that makes and changes the law.
Within those parameters, is
yourself in government to make those changes.
Within those parameters is a royal prerogative. They use the power that they have.
They abuse the royal prerogative in areas that should not be used, because the area in which they used it is already provided for in legislation, and they took it upon themselves to change that legislation.
Isn't it?
That is unheard of in constitutional terms, as far as I'm aware.
Isn't it interesting?
For ministers by royal prerogative to change the law. And I challenge you, produce to me one other law changed on foot of royal prerogative, where clauses are written into a law which never saw the light of assembly scrutiny or legislative scrutiny anywhere, but were written in secret and imported in secret into the law. Where has there ever been that constitutional change, that legislative change made without recourse to the party, name of the Assembly, authorised to change them?
There's one thing very clear from this interview this morning, Mr. Alistair. You can't question the actual position. You're questioning the process, but you are not questioning David Gordon's ability, and you're not even questioning the job. You think they've made a good appointment, don't you? They've made a good appointment, haven't they?
I'm certainly not questioning his ability. I'm intrigued that he is the ultimate poacher turned a gamekeeper, and he's the very man who would have been digging furiously into the processes deployed to actually appoint him. And I think there's a certain irony there. I'm not questioning his ability, but I am questioning, because it's the long-term lasting constitutional impact of this, that ministers think that they are above the law to the very point they can ignore the lawmakers, namely the MLAs, and themselves change the law.
The executive office statement yesterday said using
the audacious nature.
Yeah, you described this as Stalinist, and the executive office replied yesterday saying using rhetoric about Stalin or North Korea is not just hysterical but an insult to victims of oppression.
I think Stalin would have been proud of the fact that he could change the law without asking the lawmakers, without going to the legislators. I think he'd have been very proud of that. And that's exactly what these people have done in circumstances where there's a mechanism to change the law and they usurped it.
What's it feel like, Jim, to be sitting on the sidelines while Sinn Féin and the DUP have the power to do what they want?
Well, it feels like there is a need ever more for people like me to blow the whistle when there is this audacious abuse of power, such as we're seeing from DUP Sinn Féin. And when Marvin thinks he can do things like this and get away with it, then somebody needs to hold them to account.
Jim Alistair, thank you.